Tonight, we don't fight. Put down your guns, sings Oceana. Peace starts with love and putting our guns down. We here at Solutions to Violence, as well as our guest today, Kathy Mingus and Dean Walker, believe Oceana has an excellent idea. Peace starts with love and putting our guns down.
Welcome to Forward Radio. This is Solutions to Violence program that is part of Forward Radio's public affairs educational programming. You have found us at WFMP 106.5 FM on your radio. The views expressed on this program are those of our guests and not that of the station or that of Fellowship of Reconciliation. I'm Jamie McMillan, your host today with co-host Jim Johnson. Our technical engineer is Carolyn Brooks Johnson. And our guests today are Kathy Mingus and Dean Walker for Moms Demand Action.
Kathy Mingus is a state of Kentucky lead for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense America. She is a retired engineer, married with two children. She enjoys cooking, traveling, and yoga. In recent years, Kathy has spent much of her time advocating for a sensible gun policy. Dean Walker is a father who has lost two children to gun violence. He is a survivor fellow for Moms Demand Action. Welcome both Kathy and Dean.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
So, Dean, let's start with you. What is a survivor fellow?
As a survivor fellow, enabled to deal with having survived gun violence, either personally or within a close, a known associate or family member. And within that, I've been taught and instructed as how to be in touch with my feelings and how to share those feelings with others and to share my experience with others. So it's an enabling process that kind of helps me heal and at the same time allows me to tell my story in a more effective manner.
Okay. So, Kathy Mingus, tell us about Moms Demand Action. Where did it begin?
Okay.
Whose idea was it? What's its purpose?
Well, Moms Demand Action was founded the day after the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary when 20 first and second graders and six school administrators were killed. A woman named Shannon Watts, who was a stay-at-home mother of five, looked online for some sort of a gun violence prevention organization that would be modeled after Mothers Against Drunk Driving, but taking on the issue of gun violence. And she couldn't find anything, so she started a Facebook page, and from that, we have grown into the organization we have today. In 2014, Moms Demand Action joined forces with Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which is the organization that Mayor Bloomberg had founded. And together, we became Every Town for Gun Safety. That's the name of our umbrella organization. Within Every Town for Gun Safety, we have Moms Demand Action and Mayors Against Illegal Guns and the Survivor Network, the Every Town Survivor Network, and newly Students Demand Action. Every Town also does research and has a lot of data available on the Every Town research site if you wanted to take a look at that. So just altogether, there are around 6 million of us who are working together, volunteers and supporters, to bring sensible gun legislation to this country and to end gun violence.
Kathy, you all have no doubt been involved with or contact with local and state or even national officials. What have you been able to approach them, and what results of contacts with them have you had?
We talk to everybody that'll talk to us, and we even try to talk to the people who don't really want to talk to us. So we reach out to all of them. We have our advocacy day every year in Frankfort where we meet with state legislators, the state senators, state representatives. We also go to Frankfort during the legislative session for various committee meetings and votes, and we go to meetings of the interim joint committees, no matter where they are held all across state. We meet with local mayors, with the city councils, and with school boards, and like I said, just anyone and everyone that we can talk to, because we know that we just need to keep bringing our message to the forefront and making sure that we're heard, because we represent the majority of the people in this country, and the majority of the people in the country want sensible gun laws enacted. So that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Kathy, do you have a regular meeting with these people, or is it just random as you need to, or how's that go?
It really depends on what's going on at the time. For example, when the Interim Joint Committee on Education was considering what to do about school safety after the shooting at Marshall County High School, they had interim joint committee meetings all through the summer, and they also established the working group on school safety is what it's called. And so we went to those meetings all across the state, from Cadiz to Prestonsburg to Northern Kentucky, Frankfort, Glasgow, wherever they were. We followed them all over the state and went to the meetings so that we could speak with them about this issue. So we called them on the phone. We called the legislative comment line a lot, which is one way to get in touch with all of our state legislators, and it's a great asset. I wouldn't say we have standing meetings, but we go everywhere we can all the time. The Cafe Louis that the public library holds here in town. town, we go to all of those. We have members that go to each and every one to speak to the state and local representatives who are present. And again, those are, at all levels of government.
Okay, so Kathy, during the Bevin administration, the Kentucky legislature passed a law that allows Kentucky citizens to carry concealed guns without a permit. What does Moms have to say about this law?
Okay, well, this is a bad law.
Well, no, I'll say a little bit more about it in regard to it. It is a bad law. We know that there's a significant increase in gun violence when a state allows a non-permitted concealed weapon law to go through. Missouri, Alaska, and Arizona saw significant increases in regard to gun violence. Missouri, 20%. Alaska, 87%. Arizona, 42% in regard to the years preceding, the year after this permitless concealed law was passed. I was very saddened by that. Having had children and coaching high school girls, I deal with them a lot when they're talking about the anxiety of getting their permit and studying for the driving test and doing all the practice that they do in order to get on the road. And someone can go get a lethal weapon with no training whatsoever, no knowledge of how to load that gun, how to be responsible with gun, how to store that gun, how to use that gun. I think it's really a very dangerous, a nonsensical law.
Okay. WDRB-TV story entitled Louisville Homicides Reach 56 Following Weekend Gun Violence, which aired June 22nd, 2020, explains that there have been 15 more homicides in 2020 than there were at this point in 2019. So the number of killings as a result of gun violence is increasing. The total number of criminal shootings has now reached 219. How does Moms view this increase?
Well, it's really hard to say exactly. It takes a lot of study, let's say, to dig into the details to say exactly why one year's crime statistics are different than another. But at the same time, there's been a lot of things that have changed between 2019 and 2020. The coronavirus restrictions and changes and just some of the societal changes that have happened have made a huge impact. There's been an increase in domestic violence and gun suicide across the country. But we know that we could make a difference with all of this if we would pass in this state some common sense gun safety laws. Just as simple a thing as expanding background checks to all gun sales would make it less likely that people who should not have guns would have access to them.
Research conducted in Everytown for Gun Safety is an article published February 2020. It's entitled "Gun Violence in America Explains the Average Deaths Per Year as a Result of Gun Violence in U.S." And it's like 30,000. The number of suicides. 37,000. Yeah. And the number of suicides is about 23,000. Number of homicides is 13,000. Can you give us some thoughts on that? How would you explain the differences in those deaths, those gun-related deaths?
So we know that every day in the United States, our group was founded after a mass shooting, which draws a lot of attention. But every day, we know that about 100 people lose their lives to gun violence. And gun suicides are much more likely to be effective than any other method. The remainder, the about 13,000 or about a third of the people who are killed every day, those are mostly gun homicides. And gun homicides are concentrated in about 124 cities in the country, and Louisville is one of them. Gun homicides disproportionately affect communities of color, so it's a very important thing for us to talk about right now. Because you had asked in your question that I was getting ready to answer, to ask about why the U.S. isn't as safe as other countries.
Yeah, most Americans think that this country is pretty safe to live in and raise a family. So why is that different? Why are there more here than other countries?
We have the living here is really very, very different than other countries. But I think that we become a bit numb to the numbers because of the constant impact of them. You know, when you lose 100 people every day, after a while, it's not newsworthy anymore. And I think that that is part of the reason that we don't understand. Dean actually lived in Scotland for a while, so he has another perspective on it.
And I take a look at some of these numbers. Having lived in Scotland in 1981, 1982, most of the police there did not carry guns, and there were two homicides in the 2 years that I lived there with the use of firearms. It's alarming here in Kentucky that we look at a 32% increase in gun deaths from 2009 to 2018, and a 63% increase in gun homicides in that 2009 to 2018 time period. I think that the thing that's really different about the countries around the world and why we're not as safe as many other nations is the fact that the ready and easy access to a firearm. Here in the United States, we have 59,000 licensed gun dealers. We have 31,000 post offices. We have 14,000 McDonald's. So if you're taking a look at that, there's four times more licensed gun dealers in the United States than there are McDonald's. There just seems to be a McDonald's on every corner wherever you go. So it gives you an idea about the easy access and the ready access to guns within our culture. And I think that's really the main difference, the easy access to a firearm.
Okay. But we do know, too, that there are things that we can do still with the access to reduce the violence. And expanding background check to all gun sales is the number one thing that we could do to make ourselves safer. Because most people don't recognize this, but it is not required for every gun sale that you undergo a background check. There's they call it the private seller channel, and that could mean someone like, you know, if you inherited a gun from your Uncle Bill and you want to get rid of it, you could sell it as a private seller. It also includes pawn shops, certain internet sales, and that sort of stuff. About 40% of gun sales go through this channel, and there's no background check required when you go through these channels in Kentucky. And so expanding background checks to all of these gun sales would cut down on the number of deaths because we keep the guns out of people that aren't supposed to have them. States that have gone ahead on their own and made this law change have a 10% lower rate of homicide, and they have dramatically lower rates of firearm suicide, and they have less gun trafficking as well. So it's a good thing. It improves life overall, and we could make things much better just if we would pass these laws.
Kathy, Moms certainly supports tighter background checks, and you claim this would diminish violence in the country. What's your evidence tighter background checks would diminish the number of violence?
Okay, so first of all, it's not actually changing the background check itself. It's just making it so that the background check is a step in every gun sale. It's still the same thing to go through the NICS system and look at the person to see if they are a felon or are for some reason precluded from buying a firearm. It's not anything more strict. It's just making it more comprehensive, making it affect all sales instead of just some gun sales. And the evidence is 2013, there was the Manchin-Toomey Amendment that was proposed as a response to the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary, but it was blocked. But the Manchin-Toomey Amendment would have expanded background checks to all gun sales. And a number of states went ahead on their own, and they said, you know, this seems like a really good idea. And so they enacted expanded background checks in their own state. And in those states, there's a 10% lower rate of gun homicide because they just do a much better job of keeping guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them.
This mentioning and background check policy, would that include gun shows, which are allowed to sell guns without any check and background checks at all?
Well, some people at gun shows are allowed to sell guns without any checks. But if there's a license, so federally licensed firearms dealers are always required to conduct background checks. Some of the federally licensed firearm dealers have booths at gun shows and sell guns at gun shows. And they have a provision right there on site at the gun show to conduct background checks. Other people that sell guns at gun shows are private sellers, and they don't have to conduct a background check. It's not a legal requirement in Kentucky. In some states it is, but it's not in Kentucky. So this has been named the gun show loophole, but it's really private seller. That's the real distinction.
Okay. So there needs to be a federal law.
Yes, bill that was passed by the House. It's H.R. 8 that would expand background checks to essentially all gun sales. There are certain little carve-outs which make sense, but it would essentially expand background checks to all gun sales. The Senate has not acted on this bill.
And we take a look at those of us that are out and about in the state. You go to court days and various fairs in all of our communities, and I would say that at 95% of those activities, someone's selling firearms. They're not doing background checks.
So Moms also advocates for permits for gun ownership. Why are those so important?
Well, okay, so when we were talking about the permit associated with Senate Bill 150, that's a permit to carry a concealed deadly weapon. But our big focus is to support any system and all systems that ensure that all gun sales go through a background check, because there is such strong evidence to say that that saves lives. So some states have permit to purchase requirements, but not all. Kentucky does not have a permit to purchase system. But that was why we supported when Kentucky's permitting system includes a background check. So if you had a permit to carry a concealed deadly weapon, you would undergo a background check once a year, because we all start out as law-abiding citizens, but we don't always stay that way. And so that's why repeating the background check will pick up a change from, hey, you know, Joe Smith is a law-abiding citizen, to, oh, look, Joe Smith is no longer a law-abiding citizen and he should not be carrying a concealed deadly weapon.
Let's look at something called red flag laws. What kind of law is it? And why do moms and every town advocate for these red flag laws?
Red flag laws are a very important way to have law enforcement or a family member intervene in a crisis situation. And what would happen is that someone in great emotional turmoil, someone that's truly in crisis, who is at risk of harming themselves or harming others, that there's a judicial process by which those firearms can be removed from that person for a temporary time period. There's a judicial process. I say law enforcement where a family member can bring that to the court. It's a due process type of proceeding, and the judge would rule at that particular point as to whether that person would retain their firearms in that situation. It's a law that's been enacted in 18 states within our country and has reduced the number of suicides tremendously, and also homicides at the same time. It's a red flag law that is something that's being worked on here in Kentucky by Representative Paul Hornback and Morgan McGarvey, and we're hoping to see that move through and get more discussion and move through the legislature here in Kentucky in the next session. So red flag laws are really geared toward removing firearms from a person who's in crisis.
But Dean, the gun owner has an opportunity to make his case before the judge makes the decision to remove his guns on a temporary basis, right?
Yes, they do. So there's due process. This is not just a one-sided situation. It's not a recorded criminal process or anything like that. There's no record that goes along with it. And each side has their opportunity to present their case. The gun owner saying that I have my rightful ability, and I'm in the same situation to be able to keep my firearm versus law enforcement or family member who's bringing us a background to say that that person is not fit to have that firearm available to them at that time, because they are indeed a risk to themselves or to others. But it is a due process in front of a judge.
Okay. Dean Walker, tell us your story and explain why red flag laws may have saved your son's life.
I thank you for that question. In 2017, it was a difficult year. My wife passed away from pancreatic cancer. In February, my daughter Savannah was shot and killed while attending a concert at a local art gallery here in Louisville in March. And then in October, my son died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Oh.
I believe a red flag law might have saved his life. In fact, I really believe it would have saved his life. Right after I broke the news, or right before I broke the news about Savannah's death to my son, I asked that he get all of his guns and together, and that I would not talk to him until I had all of his guns. I took every one of his guns away. My son was a responsible gun owner who had trigger locks and had guns gun safe at his house. He gave me all those. I told him about the situation, and he was extremely distraught. Nate was bipolar and self-medicated over time. He wasn't a saint, but he was a good, good person. And he mocked me in the situation. He said, "Dad, I can have another gun within 2 hours." And he, in essence, later that day did. So had there been a red flag law and I had the ability to have law enforcement take those guns away from him in that process, my son would not have gone to break the law and gotten another firearm. He would not have wanted to go to jail because of breaking the law. He would have respected that law enforcement, that judicial process of a red flag law, and not gotten another firearm. The firearm that he bought that next day was a firearm from which he died. And I feel strongly that a red flag law might have kept him alive. And I've heard that story from so many other families, and it's It's a situation where we can intervene in a crisis and take a firearm away. We know that a home that has access to a firearm, that a person is three times more likely to commit suicide if there's access to a firearm. Taking that away makes a big, big difference. And I say in this case with my son, he would not have broken the law. He would have definitely chose to abide by that law. And I just feel a red flag law might have saved his life.
Yeah, well, that's a profound story. But some people think that's a controversial issue, red flag laws. So can you please explain why the red flag laws are controversial? Then explain why moms...
I don't really think it's controversial. I really take a look at the fact that if we look at the statistics of the people that support red flag laws, it's over 80% of the U.S. population supports a red flag law. We have 18 states that have them. And even people that are the most strong advocate for gun rights, when I sit and talk to them about a red flag law, they realize it's common sense. It's not some situation where someone can say something and the police come and commandeer your weapons. That's not the way it works. You have a due process. And it's something that we look at that people are truly in crisis. And it's really important now. You know, we're taking a look at the pandemic. There's a lot of economic turmoil. We know suicide rates have gone up. Domestic violence rates have gone up. These red flag laws could really help in reducing the numbers of people that are having, you know, deaths in their family. It's red flag laws work. It's not controversial. It's just people don't, I believe that people don't truly understand what it does.
Yeah, hasn't Indiana had their law in effect for about 15 years?
15 years, and they've seen an 8% over that 15-year time period, an 8% reduction in suicide. Connecticut seen a 15% reduction. We know that it worked. These aren't just theoretical ideas. These laws, when enacted, reduced the number of homicide deaths and also primarily suicide deaths.
Yeah, I think California credits their red flag law with having stopped 3 mass shootings since it was enacted after the shooting at the university by the young man whose family knew he was going to do it. He told them he wanted to go out, and he published his manifesto, and he killed, I believe, 6 people.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, right here in Louisville now, on June 17th, at the civil rights rally, Stephen Lopez allegedly shot and killed Tyler Girth. Courier Journal article by Andrew Wilson, he calls it Mental Illness Raises Gun Question. Now, I explained that Lopez's grandparents said Lopez had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, yet he was able to purchase a gun. We later learned he did not use the gun he had purchased for that killing. But why should someone have a diagnosed mental emotional disorder be allowed to purchase a gun?
Well, it depends on what the mental disorder is. There are some that make you dangerous. There are some that don't. And a lot of mentally ill people are victims of gun violence as opposed to perpetrators. But there are some, and I'm not an expert on that, so I'm not going to try to enumerate which diagnoses are the ones that should be disqualifying. That's up to mental health people to figure that out. You know, again, we come around to background checks. If we could get the gun sales to all go through a background check system, if you have this mental health diagnosis, and provided your state has input the data into NICS, but if you have the diagnosis and the data is there, then you'll be precluded from purchasing a weapon that you shouldn't have.
Okay, does that have to be a federal law, or can it be?
That is already a federal law. That was part of the Brady background check system. If you remember the man who shot President Reagan and James Brady and the Washington, D.C. police officer was judged to have mental illness, and he was committed to a place for mental health treatment for a number of years. And so there's already a carve-out. There's already a portion of the law that it disqualifies people who have certain mental illness diagnoses from obtaining firearms. But, you know, as long as 40% of gun sales are sold without a background check, it doesn't stop anyone. And the other problem that is becoming a little bit more important right now because of the uptick in gun sales is the Charleston loophole, which is how the shooter at Mother Emanuel Church got his gun. He should not have been able to purchase the weapon, but there's a clause that says if the background check doesn't finish processing within 3 days, then the seller can go ahead and sell the weapon without the background check. And that's what happened in that case. There's a bill in Congress also that would extend that from 3 days to 10 days to just give the system, in case it's getting stuck in a loop for some reason. And I don't understand why it gets stuck. I just know that in the case of Mother Emanuel mass shooting, it did. But they would like to extend it from a 3-day period to a 10-day period to give that background check system a little bit longer to finish processing before the gun can be sold without a background check.
Okay. So because of the killing of Breonna Taylor, Rashad Brooks, and other unarmed African-Americans by police. Big city police departments have come under extreme criticism and scrutiny. So recently, MSNBC News produced a program that featured big city mayors in defense of their police departments. One of the mayors pointed out that the job of the police has become much harder, more dangerous, because so many American citizens possess firearms. What's my position on the job police are assigned to do, considering the fact that so many possess firearms?
Well, we agree that it becomes more difficult for the police to do their job when there are so many guns everywhere and they have to assume that everyone that they approach is carrying a concealed deadly weapon. But we also know that police gun violence against communities of color is another aspect of gun violence, and it's caused a lot of trouble between communities and the police force that are supposed to be working with them, because it leads to levels of distrust. You know, you see an unarmed man who's running away, like in Atlanta, who's shot in the back and killed. Of course, people are going to be afraid, and they're going to be afraid to talk to the police. So every town is in favor of taking a look at policing and working to make some changes in the way policing is affected. One of the big things is to have change. So every town has come out with a five-part proposal for addressing the issue of police gun violence. A strong legal standard to bar the use of unnecessary force, and a requirement for officers to speak up and to intervene to stop abuse if they see it happening. A commitment to de-escalation and building community relations through procedural justice. And procedural justice involves groups, again, like we mentioned earlier, like Cure Violence, who are community people and community members. They're not police, but they are working in the neighborhoods and to address outbreaks of gun violence or outbreaks of violence before they become lethal, before they can accelerate, before they can blow up. The way the Cure Violence program works is it has to be a neighborhood organized program. And they have people who live in the neighborhood and are aware of situations where tensions are rising and the potential for violence is increasing. And they go out and they are, because they have credibility in the neighborhood, because they're from the neighborhood, because they live there and the community members all know them, they have the credibility to go out and work with people in the community to de-escalate the problems. And de-escalation is before things turn deadly is such a major fact, a major thing that needs to be implemented. So those are the top two. I'm sorry, go ahead.
One of the things I'd like to bring up, Jim, is the fact, if you take a look at police training in the United States, most police officers in the United States are trained roughly in an academy from 3 to 5 months. And in most of the other parts of the world, police officers are trained for 2 years before they go on an active duty type of status. So I have police officers in my family and many police officer friends, and it's a very, very difficult job. And we feel that it's something that needs to be discussed, brought to the forefront. Every town in Moms has talked about the various ways that we can work within the community to make it safer for residents and for the police officers at the same time. And I'm just hoping that all this recent news allows us to come together rather than getting further and further apart.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Breonna Taylor, you mentioned Rashad Brooks, and of course George Floyd is such a name that's known around the world. Police gun violence disproportionately affects communities of color, and it's something that we have to address, the systemic problem, and we have to fight the toxic combination of racism, the gun culture, and the militarization of law enforcement. Law enforcement should be guardians. They should not be warriors.
There's a political poll that notes the fact that 84% of Americans support preventing sales of firearms to people convicted of violent misdemeanors. So here's a question. While 82% support increasing the age to limit 21, do Americans support preventing gun restrictions?
Americans overwhelmingly support the types of things that we've been proposing. Dean had the figures on red flag laws. Expanded background checks is 93% of Americans support expanding background checks to all gun sales, and that includes 89% of Republicans and 87% of gun owners. The measures that we're supporting are things that have evidence to back up the fact that they work, and they are very, very, they're overwhelmingly popular in the country. So yes, people support doing this. People understand that there are reasonable things that we can do, and that's what we're talking about. We're very reasonable people.
want to say and take a look at that is that it's, the data's been there. It's overwhelming that the American population supports so many of these changes to responsible gun ownership and the reduced gun violence. The roadblock is in the Senate. The roadblock is with Mitch McConnell. And if we take a look at the House Resolution 8, is there to stand and have universal background check. And that's been sitting on his desk since last year and continues to sit, as do other laws. That Mitch McConnell is the roadblock to what the American people have shown time and time again that they want. The roadblock is our senior senator from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell.
Dean's right. Mitch McConnell has been a problem. He was a problem when the Standard Grevier shooting happened in Louisville back in the 80s. He has been blocking things ever since, and he's continuing to block any reasonable and common sense measures that would keep the country safer. It would make us a safer place to live. And he's stopping that from happening.
Okay.
Yeah, the facts book global in Kentucky, Moms Demand Action chapter, in a pretty unique position. Then why does our local Moms Demand Action chapter need to to pressure McConnell into bringing these two bills up to vote and others that don't cover those bills?
Well, I would ask anyone and everyone who's listening to this program who agrees that it's common sense and it would save lives all across the country as well as here in Kentucky to call Mitch McConnell's office and encourage him to allow these bills to come to a vote. Because I believe that if he would allow them to come to a vote, they would pass easily. The senators are not unaware of how strong the support is for these measures. And so I believe if he would just stop blocking them, that they would pass easily. So call Mitch McConnell's office, please.
So at this point, FCC regulations require us to state a disclaimer. So we cannot, statement that you just made asking people to call McConnell's office, this does not come from Jamie or I or any of the programmers. That comes from our guest, Kathy Mingus. So we have to make that statement.
Thank you. And I'm very proud of it.
Okay.
So, Kathy, conservative supporters of gun rights claim the Second Amendment as their protection against the efforts for you and other groups to ask for gun safety regulations. How do you respond to those supporters?
Well, I would like to respond with words that came from Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia when he wrote his Heller decision, which addressed the Second Amendment specifically. And he said that the right to keep and bear arms is not an unlimited right. He said it is subject to certain regulations. And he explicitly mentioned background checks and permits as being things that are protected under the Constitution. So all we're doing is trying to make sure that that these regulations, which protect our lives and protect everyone's lives, will be expanded to all gun sales. And Justice Scalia agreed with us, with the right to do that.
Okay. The Texas chapter of Moms Demand Action and Students Demand Action, both part of the Everytown Network, released the following statement. In response to the death of Mercy Mack, black transgender woman shot and killed in Dallas Tuesday morning, July 1st, 2020. Quote, gun violence disproportionately impacts black trans women, especially here in Texas, and we must do more to stop this epidemic, end quote. So what do you suggest is the more to do in this and other black lives taken by gun violence?
This is where we talk about we need to address the toxic culture of racism that exists in our country, and we need to address some of the systemic problems that have existed because of that have gone on over time.
So I'd say that we take a look at this. Our culture, unfortunately, is allowing this to happen. And once again, I just go back to the fact that it's the ready access to guns. And, you know, we have just guns are so readily available. And it's unfortunate that there's a second of the American population that has various, I think, very convoluted feelings about transgender or people of race, and they act in this manner.
One of our themes is that we need to disarm hate, and that includes hatred that is directed towards people because of their race, their sexuality, their, you know, whatever the reason is. We want to disarm hate. We want to address the root causes of the hate, clean it up, clear it up, and help eliminate these sorts of things because we have some serious issues in our country.
Yeah, absolutely. But also within, and you kind of talked about this earlier, but within the COVID-19 crisis, another public health emergency is threatening our kids. Gun sales have surged during the pandemic with an estimated 1.9 million more guns sold this March and April than during the same period last year. How do you respond to the issues of increased gun sales during the pandemic, and what should be the message to those who feel the need to purchase a firearm because of COVID-19?
Well, you know, it's really sad, but the NRA has standard playbook that they go back to over and over again, and they've been doing it again. It's a fear-mongering. They try to make people afraid of each other. They try to make people afraid of everything. And they use that fear to drive gun sales. And so they've been doing that during the coronavirus. I'm not really sure what they think they're going to do with a gun to protect themselves from coronavirus. The virus is not something that you can see, but they have been successful in this tactic before, and they've done it again. So the BeefSmart program has five aspects, and it is a program that focuses on adults who are the gun owners and who are the ones who are supposed to be responsible. The S is for securely storing your weapon, because as we've discussed in other times, an unsecured weapon is something that can lead to the death of children. Children know where the guns are in homes, and people who think that hiding a gun under a mattress or sticking it in their dresser drawer has made it so that their child doesn't know where the gun is, they're mistaken. Kids know where the guns are, and unfortunately, they will at times take them out and play with them because they're children, and children's minds let them do silly things. So it's up to the adults to make sure that they are securely storing the weapon. And that's with the gun needs to be locked with a trigger lock or in a gun safe, and the ammunition needs to be removed and stored separately. The M is for modeling responsible behavior. You know, that would include things like always handling the gun carefully. But these are some of the things that are taught in the permitting class, and not, you know, pointing a gun, whether you think it's loaded or not, at someone else. A is for ask. Because as parents, you need to ask when your child is going to visit at another home, whether that's a family member or a friend. You need to ask if there are guns in the home and if they're stored securely or not, so that you're aware. And, you know, perhaps if the answer is no, you know, or we just hide, it's underneath the mattress, the kids don't know about it, you could perhaps invite a friend to come visit you at your house instead. R is for recognizing the signs of suicide. As Dean mentioned, homes with unsecured weapons have a much higher incidence of the rate of suicide, the likelihood of committing suicide is increased by a factor of 3. So you need to be aware of the signs of suicide, and you might need to store your guns somewhere else if you're having, you know, if you have someone in your home who's in crisis. And then T is to tell your friends to be smart. So those are the acronyms. The short presentation, we have presenters who would be happy to do that for any group that wants to, and you can reach out to us on Facebook, and we'll find, you know, just look for Moms Demand Action, and we'll get it set up.
Well, Kathy, many American women are on the front line of gun violence. Women experience domestic violence at higher rates than men. Domestic violence organizations have seen a surge in calls for help now. It happens as stay-at-home orders force many to quarantine with their abusers. Increase of gun purchases has put women at even greater risk, because when a gun is present, domestic violence can happen 5 times more. So what is Moms Demand Action doing in support of women?
Yeah, it's 5 times more likely that a woman will be killed if there's a gun present during a domestic violence situation. It's not just that there will be domestic violence. It's much more likely that she will be killed. So certain domestic misdemeanors and felony offenses are disqualifying things under the background check system that would preclude you from being allowed to purchase a firearm. You're also not allowed to own a firearm if you have crossed the line on these things. But Kentucky does not have a state law that mirrors the federal law. And so the upshot of that is that here in Kentucky, unless a judge specifically orders the sheriff's office to go collect the guns from a gun owner who is convicted of some of these domestic abuse situations, nobody goes to get the guns. Kentucky needs a domestic violence law that mirrors the federal law to help protect women against their abusers, and to make sure that the guns are removed from domestic violence situations.
And Jim, I think that's really important. We take a look at, there's 52 women every month that are killed by an intimate partner here in the United States. And domestic violence order, we spoke with legislators in Frankfurt this past year about it. Very few, if any, of the legislators were aware of the fact that Kentucky was not in line with federal law. And we know that it would save lives, and our the women in our lives deserve more protection than what we're giving them.
Yeah, absolutely. So every town has enlisted more than a dozen religious leaders to boost voter turnout this fall in support of candidates who support measures to prevent gun violence. Every town, which expects to spend some $60 million on this year's election, is foregoing its interfaith effort amid ongoing concerns about shootings at houses of worship. This group's partners include representatives from Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, and Shiite backgrounds, several of them well-known progressive activists. Are there local efforts to unite various religious leaders and groups for gun violence prevention?
Absolutely. In Louisville, we have our interfaith outreach team who are working with members of different faiths. Many that you've mentioned, Buddhist, I think, is not on here, but that's another, in addition to Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, and Sikh. They're reaching out to the Buddhist and to different communities around to develop this sort of partnership. Last December, the interfaith group held a vigil, a remembrance, for people who were lost during 2019 to gun violence. It was held at the St. Martin de Porres Church on West Broadway in December.
You're talking about Interfaith Path to Peace?
Well, in every town, or in Moms Demand Action, one of our groups is called Interfaith Outreach.
Oh, okay.
And that's a group, and Interfaith Pathways to Peace is one of the organizations that they meet with regularly and work on to work together to bring peace to our city and to end the tide of violence. So yeah, U.S. Representative Lucy McBath, who's lost her son, Jordan Davis, to gun violence in Florida. Jordan was playing his radio loudly, and a man objected to it and killed him. And Lucy McBath is one of the founders of the Interfaith Outreach portion of In Moms Demand Action.
Wow. Yeah, so the research I've done on Amy McGrath, she's kind of vague.
Here's what I look at. My dad was a lieutenant colonel in the Ohio National Guard. And he joined the Army during World War II after the attack on Pearl Harbor. He went to West Point for a year and dreamed of making the military his career, but he tore up both of his knees, and so he couldn't. But he stayed with the reserves, and then he was in the National Guard for most of the rest of his life. And he and many other military people are appalled by some of the weapons of war that get thrown around in our country. So I haven't talked to her. I don't know this. I just, knowing her, having talked to Mike Breuer, who is a retired Marine, a lieutenant colonel, and any number of other former military officers, I believe that the military are in line, very much in line with what we're talking about, because we're talking about being reasonable. We're talking about safety. We're not talking about, you know, anything that's wild and crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And Mike Boyer, we know him well. So let's get to this next question.
Let's get back to what we're recording. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So Trump advisors believe his consistent efforts to spotlight his credentials as a Second Amendment warrior can help him draw a contrast with the eventual Democratic presidential nominee, probably Joe Biden. The top tier of Democratic candidates have made bolstering gun restrictions a key part of their platform, as is Joe Biden. How important does this issue become in 2020, in the 2020 presidential election and state of local elections?
Well, first of all, I would say what we're talking about are guns, are regulations on people. We're not so much on guns, but we're talking about regulating people. And, you know, going back, that is part of what's supported. You know, you see 93% of people supporting background checks. That's the, one of the regulations we're talking about. I think that the Trump and his advisors are out of step with mainstream America.
Yeah.
Well, for his 2020 reelection campaign, Trump is saying he's a gun rights champion. He's claimed that Republican lawmakers are too scared of the NRA. He did that, and then he backed away from that idea. That's a turn from earlier times when he, as president, toyed with the idea of pushing Congress to enact stricter gun laws. After a mass shooting in Ohio and Texas, 2019, Trump embraced for strong background checks. And then he was backpedaling again. What's your response to the president's positions on gun safety?
I don't think that he actually has a position. I think he says what is convenient to him at the time.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that becomes our charge, is to keep the pressure on, because when the pressure was on after the Ohio and Texas mass shootings and what had gone on, all of a sudden he's with people for universal background checks, and he's going to bring this up, and he just weathered the storm for a few weeks and then let it die down. What we're committed to at Moms is to not let that die down.
Every Town for Gun Safety is partially funded by Michael Bloomberg. I think we mentioned that before. And he recently announced that he would spend $60 million to beat gun rights proponents on state and federal level in 2020. The group advocates feel emboldened about the 2018 midterm elections, in which more than 30 NRA-backed Republicans candidates lost their races. How important is the money in this campaign for November? How might that make a difference in Kentucky?
Well, first of all, I think that the number of NRA-backed candidates that lost in 2018 further supports what I said earlier, with Trump being out of step with mainstream America, who would like to end gun violence. Money is, unfortunately, far, far, far too important in our elections. And for quite a few years, the NRA has spent a lot of money to buy the loyalty of certain legislators. And, you know, Michael Bloomberg is leveling the playing field a bit with having enough money to support the idea of doing what's right for the country instead of what's expedient for your campaign war chest. So I look for another good year. We just had a special election in Kentucky in State Senate District 26, and our gun sense candidate, Karen Berg, is now State Senator-elect Karen Berg. And I'm just thrilled to death, and I think that this issue is an issue that we are on the right side of it, and we are going to make a difference this year in the election. And I'm very happy to say that I think that we're on the right side of history, and I think that the politicians will fall in line as they figure that out.
Good to hear. We actually have another representative that was elected, to Pam Stevenson. I think she'll be open to gun regulations, too. We might want to...
She was running for Charles Booker's seat against Reverend Snarden. Yes.
Right.
Yes, I've actually spoken with her. But her election wasn't final. She'll be on the ballot in November. Karen Berg's election was final. This was a special election to replace Ernie Harris, State Senator Ernie Harris. So hers is the only one that's absolutely final. No more ballots. She's done. She ran against Republican Bill Furco. And one.
Yeah.
But She's not the only gun sense candidate. She's just the only one who had her election instead of the primary election. That's why I was highlighting her.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Kathy and Dee, what's the next Moms Demand Action event scheduled, and how will that event occur? considering the COVID-19 situation?
Well, we have certainly had to change the way we are doing things. We have gone virtual, but we started out online, so that's, you know, it's not a foreign place for us. We've held our, instead of having local group meetings like we normally did, we are having statewide meetings with our volunteers, virtual state meetings, and the next one will be Sunday, July 19th. And we're going to be talking with an author about the rural and urban divide and with a former ATF agent. That's our program for July 17th, 2 o'clock.
How do you get that link out to people?
We have been sending it to people who are our volunteers. So if you want to join us, you should text READY, the word READY, R-E-A-D-Y, to 64433. And there's a little form that'll pop up, and then you'll get a welcome call, and we'll get you folded into the organization. We do look forward to the days when we can go back out and have rallies like we had last summer, when we can meet face-to-face with people, and when we can welcome people in who haven't met us before. We've missed all of our public interactions, like the parades and stuff, but we are doing Be Smart presentations virtually to organizations that want them, and we're doing meetings with our volunteers and recording meetings like this one, all virtually. So we're adapting.
Well, I'm sorry to say we are out of time. Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Dean, for joining us in our conversation today on Solutions to Violence.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Our program is broadcast on Mondays at 5 p.m., Tuesdays at 8 a.m., and Wednesdays at 6 a.m. You can listen live by Googling forwardradio.org and choosing Listen Live Now. For more information and the schedule of programs that will surprise you and delight you, Google forwardradio.org and click on Broadcast Schedule. If you'd like to respond to us in our discussion with Kathy and Dean, you can reach us via the following email, solutionstoviolence2018@gmail.com. A program featuring Dean Walker and Kathy Mikas will be placed in our archives this Wednesday. You and your friends, family, neighbors can listen to the program again by visiting us at forwardradio.org, scrolling down to Program Archives, then scrolling down to Solutions to Violence program that features Dean Walker and Kathy Mikas.
So we leave you now with one final thought. Change to me is not about what any one individual does. It's about what we all do when we all join together and understand that none of us is expendable and that we can make the change we need. It's a quote from Louisville's own Carla Wallace. Thanks for listening.